Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we're talking Alien Resurrection. And Alien Resurrection is a weird one for me, and you'll hear on the podcast that Daniel likes it much more, and I'm mostly confused. But that's just the fun of this show. Anyway, I appreciate you listening, and next week we're back to original content and original programming, and we're done with these Patreon episodes. Now, with that in mind, please, you have been so good. I'm going to drop the trailer for my new show, which hopefully will be releasing in August. Now, thanks. Just let me know what you think. Thanks.
We're up to Alien Resurrection, a kind of loose-fit movie that thinks it's saying something about women, but it's not! I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia Defended Your Childhood, River on Cineprov, and on panel we have...
Matthew W. Quinn, and if you like spiny things with big teeth, check out my new release collection, Flashing Steel, Flashing Fire.
Hello, this is Daniel, and it's in me!
Gross.
This is Adam Darby, and I'm glad to be back. I don't think I've been around since Breakfast Club.
Yeah.
So.
It's been almost half a season. Almost a season. Probably a whole season.
Yeah.
Good Lord.
Just about.
Yeah, because Breakfast Club was mid-season five, I think. We did that summer kind of popcorn-y.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back.
Good to be back.
It's funny because I keep running into you. At the end, we'll do some plugs, obviously. For those of you who don't remember, Adam is constantly in the local acting scene in the Atlanta area. So you'll see him in something. And he does other podcasts, which you can plug at the end, too.
Will do.
So, as I mentioned before, this is Sigourney Weaver's final... She finally learned to say no.
Man. Well, did you read the IMDb of why she did this anyway?
They took a truckload of money up to her house and just said, have all the money?
And she's not made of stone.
It actually infuriates me the most that the credits just call her Ripley.
Believe it or not. Well, especially since this movie, they do everything they can to establish her. Right?
Yeah.
They call her Ellen, like... A lot. A weird amount.
I don't consider her the real Ripley. But,
she's
you know.
Explicitly not. Isn't that the whole point?
She's, yeah, clone.
And she makes a weird comment about when they, I mean, I guess at the end they save Earth. Like, literally.
That was a terrible line. Well, I guess we saved Earth.
After
somehow creating an explosion big enough to be seen from space.
Yeah, there's, yeah, everyone's dead.
Yeah, what's worse, an infestation of giant termites, there are only about 10 of them, or a nuclear winter?
I would say it would have been funnier if they went all the way and then you just see the atmosphere dissolve away. And they're just like, they just kind of fly off. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
Adam, do you want to give the plot synopsis? You haven't been here in a while.
Nah, you take it away.
Suzzy?
It's 200 years after Alien 3 when Ripley died. There's an experiment, not by Weyland-Yutani, but by some successor corporation, to clone her specifically to get the queen that was inside her back so they can manufacture their own aliens. So they leave the clone alive, who's now got some xenomorph traits,
right.
Like mildly acidic blood. But anyway, in the middle of this, this group of space pirates comes on board the ship where they're making these aliens, nominally to pick up some cargo. But while they're there, the aliens that they've bred start escaping, and clone Ripley and these space pirates are all trapped on the ship, and it's automatically headed back to Earth. So they have to kill the aliens, stop the ship, and save the plane.
Yeah.
It's people stuck on a ship, aliens are loose, same thing again.
The thing about this is they try to raise the stakes by having it plummet towards Earth. But we never feel it. We barely see Earth. It doesn't matter at all. And this movie is a waste of everyone's time.
They keep saying how bad Earth is and how it doesn't matter anymore anyways. So,
there's a deleted ending where you see they land in Paris and it's like looks like Nevada. So
you kidding me?
Really?
Yeah. The Paris is in ruins. It looks like the desert. And I'm wondering what the hell happened.
Especially since from space the Earth is still green.
Yeah.
So we have a people.
The Earth looks unpopulated. You think it might have just maybe everyone has left?
It's almost as though it was clip art.
Ooh, burn.
It very well could have been. I mean, those aliens swimming were definitely clip art.
Oh my god! At one point, a flying toaster goes by. It's some bad. It's funny because it goes from incredible practical effects to exactly where the budget runs out, and they just throw a GIF at someone.
Yep.
Oh wow! Yeah, you're so right.
Yeah. No.
The practical effects were solid, but that CG, man. Oof. Well, it's not Alien 3 bad, but it's bad.
It is, because like again, we always talk about this, but you notice this crap more when stuff is falling apart, right? Right. Bad CGI doesn't matter as much if the script is interesting.
Yeah.
And 3 had those moments where you're kind of interested even though the effects are crap because something is happening. Here, they're just like, well, I guess we're still trying to escape and I guess we're just going to send whatever we've got. What's the new effect from After Effects that we've got that we can make it look kind of ripply, I guess? So, I guess we should start at the beginning. The cold open is a pervy scene right out of Brazil, where a bunch of men are looking down on a corpse and they are cutting out the baby alien queen from a clone of Ripley.
Have you seen this director's other stuff? I mean, I know you and I were talking about
Delicatessen
the other day. And City of Lost Children's fantastic. But here's the thing about this director and his fantasies. They're meant to be light and whimsical. They're meant to be funny. How would that fit into an alien movie?
Well, they did have a couple amusing lines.
I'll take the word for it.
This is the guy who made Amelie. So pitch me an amusing Amelie line.
That's the only movie of his that I've seen.
I thought you were trying to sort of making it, how you make an Aliens film funny. I mean, three words. Father's dead, asshole.
I mean, that is a Jim Cameron line. So I'll give you that. But I mean, first of all, Spaceballs made Aliens funny.
Yes.
Right.
John Hurt at the end.
John Hurt at the end.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not again. Damn, that's right on. But yeah, so, yeah, I mean, but this guy does rom-com, so I don't know why they tapped him. I guess Dave Cronenberg was busy. We'll get there.
Peter Jackson, they asked, but he said no.
And he's right. I don't know what he was doing in 1997, maybe trying to get that Tintin movie still made.
He was trying to get King Kong off the ground is what he was doing.
This was after those gross New Zealand movies he made, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, those are amazing. Brain Dead? Oh, Brain Dead's my jam.
Brain Dead's good.
Meet the Feebles.
Meet the Feebles.
That could be a Defend Your Childhood. I saw that when I was probably in high school.
Yeah, but would you defend it?
I'd have to watch it again.
It's gross.
Matt, there's a gay fox in there who sings about how much he loves sodomizing other people.
Yeah, I remember that.
I would say Dead Alive was good.
Yes.
Heavenly Creatures is fine.
Oh, how about Frighteners?
Frighteners is good.
I've never seen Frighteners.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. Brain Dead and Dead Alive are the same movie.
Oh, yep. And Frighteners is what he was the year before, was 96.
So. Frighteners is great.
Yeah. And then 5 years trying to make Lord of the Rings, I guess. Because the next thing he did was...
paid off pretty well, I think.
Yeah, I'd take it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to do this alien movie? Because I'm making a fantasy movie. Yeah, but Alien.
Alien 4.
Yeah. God, can you imagine? But Peter Jackson famously turned down a lot of this kind of crap. Like, he's good at this.
Yeah. He had turned down a Texas Chainsaw Massacre movie at one point.
Oh, and they gave him... Didn't he turn in his script and they ignored his script?
I don't know.
Like, when Peter Jackson gives you something, you do Peter Jackson's script. whatever. I also want to know what they were thinking with this script, because it seems like... Take out the Xenomorphs for a second and put in any other alien... It's a bad sci-fi original ripoff of Aliens.
Yes.
Because it has the same plot points.
It has the title of a direct-to-video knockoff, and it was written by Joss Whedon. I think we should also bring that up. It was written by Joss Whedon. That Joss Whedon.
Everyone has to start somewhere.
Whose photos does he have that keeps getting him jobs? Because like all of his early crap is unwatchable garbage. Like, there's better people out there.
He co-wrote Speed.
He wrote Toy Story.
Getting good because I liked Age of Ultron.
Well, I mean, he'd been around a century.
Yeah,
before.
he'd been around for a while by the time that happened.
And Firefly was good.
Firefly's great.
Firefly's fine. So is the Buffy show he did,
but not the Buffy movie.
But I mean, but that's the problem. TV people in the 90s didn't make movies.
No.
Like, I think he even started out on Roseanne. Like,
I think you're right.
And so he did. His first movie was Toy Story, which is,
He was one of like six writers, though, wasn't he?
He was. And then he did this. And then he did Titan A.E. And then he did Atlantis, The Lost Empire. All things that we've done. And they're all terrible. Except for, of course, Toy Story. But that's only a screenplay credit. So that means he took a story that already existed and tweaked the screenplay.
I thought
it up.
Liked Atlantis, The Lost Empire.
I like... Wait, is that the first one?
That's the Michael J. Fox one, where they discover Atlantis.
Oh, yeah. I like that movie.
But
I was a child when it came out, so...
It came out in 2001. We did it, and I remember saying it was meh. It was fine, but it was meh.
I was the right demographic for it.
I think it was the last Disney movie I saw in theaters other than Pixar until Wreck-It Ralph.
Oh, wow. Okay. Long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, but... There was a while where they were making garbage, honestly.
Yeah, like, yeah, hot garbage.
And I have a daughter now, so I saw Frozen 2. Hey, don't worry about it. but there's not really an urge for the Disney demographic. Wreck-It Ralph scratched that nostalgia itch, so, you know.
That's fair.
I don't know. I like Joss. I think he does fine in The Avengers, but man, he... I mean, what saved his career, honestly, is Dr. Horrible.
Ah, yes.
Which is not only a masterpiece of what it is.
Dr. Horrible's fantastic.
It was the first thing he did clearly that was just on his own. I mean, like, Angel, Firefly, Buffy, I'm sure he was noted to death.
Yeah.
Right? Because that's corporate, mainstream, one of the networks. And then he's just like, well, we're on the writer's strike. I got it. And then he made something magical. And after that, he gets all the sci-fi, fantasy, superheroes he's wanted forever. So.
Yeah.
And then he quits because he was getting noted to death.
You know what? And eventually you just have to let him do what he wants to do. Although that's going to be what kills Disney. Speaking of Aliens movies, Jim Cameron and the Avatar movies are going to bankrupt. They're, what, $6 billion in to make 4 movies in the next 5 years?
Oh, that iron went cold a long time ago.
I don't even know who could care about Avatar. I mean,
you know,
the Avatar rides have no weight. We could just go.
you had about a 5-year window after Avatar came out to make your sequel, and you missed it.
He's missed it by a decade at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, and the thing about it was a beautiful movie because 3D was new, and you had the high resolution, and we have now since decided the high frame rate is bad and 3D is bad. So what do you got now? Jim, what have you done for me lately? Is it going to be like, are they going to spray you? Is it going to be one of those 4D theaters? He's going to bring it back, man. You're going to smell like a swamp ass when you come out. Like, and it's going to be 9 hours long.
Can you imagine what the 4D experience of Alien Resurrection would be?
Just a midget comes out with a KY hose and hoses everyone down.
Oh my god.
No, and they get sucked out through a like a quarter-sized hole in a windshield.
Oh my god. So Matt and I literally had this dialogue yesterday over text while we were figuring it out. I'm like, I can't believe there's an out-and-out fingering scene. Matt goes, no, it's about her innocence and this understanding and trying to figure it out. I'm like, no, there's a hole in Sigourney Weaver. Or sorry, there's a hole in Winona Ryder. Sigourney Weaver sticks 2 fingers in, pulls them out. They're covered in white cream, and she goes, "Does it hurt?" And I'm like, "That's a fingering scene. It doesn't need to be in this movie."
Why didn't I notice that?
And Matt goes, "Oh, I meant the other fingering scene." That's all you have to know. This movie is a flaming pile of garbage.
Now, I mean, there was sexual subtexts in the other movies too, but this one, you're right, it just.
Oof. You
it's
mean
creepy.
The tiny head penetrating your body? Yeah. Wait. The xenomorphs are phallic in any way?
Believe it or not.
No shit.
Yep.
Oh, fuck.
Something I don't get is, well, first of all, you have a group of people wanting to harvest aliens, which is a terrible idea. But like, why didn't they make a room out of some sort of material that can't be affected by acid?
My God, right?
Are they that dumb? It's the future.
Well,
especially since they seem to actually put some thought into it this time.
I mean, like, hell, Walter White on Breaking Bad, just the plastic tubs, man.
Like, they had their little evil plan on a spaceship in deep space. They had that whole elaborate containment facility where, like, the window moves to the alien tank and can move out of the way again. Well, they built this whole elaborate system. But you raise a good point. What if something doesn't react to acid? Make wall of baking soda or something?
Well, I mean, but the stupid thing is, they figure it out at the beginning because they have the fishbowl room, which is strong enough to prevent the little, like, the mouth snapper thing to go through it. And they even have the cold liquid nitrogen gas. And then the second it leaks a little bit, it escapes. What a stupid pile of horseshit. Because they know everything else about these aliens, clearly.
Now, here's the stupidest thing this movie does. It constantly forgets that it takes place 200 years in the future.
In the not too distant future.
After Aliens, which is already a few hundred years in the future. So yeah, so why is this guy paraplegic?
Even beyond that, I mean, why is technology still the same? Is looking for the alien at this point, how did they know about that? Wouldn't that be the same as some crazy person going to the beach to find buried pirate gold today?
But they make the same illusion.
People still do that, though.
But they don't find anything.
They don't find anything, and nobody takes them seriously when they do it.
Yeah. I literally had to wait for them in the dialogue to say again that Ellen Ripley died 200 years ago to remember that this movie takes place 200 years later.
Yeah.
Well, and then at the end, Ripley can fly the ship because she's like, this thing is older than I am. Bullshit. The idea that, it's 2020 now. Hey, look at that. 1820, a wooden ship from 1820 just sailing around the world. My goodness gracious, what a pile of horse piles.
If this is like some off the books middle management scheme, maybe they don't have top of the line stuff. I mean, that whole plot is so convoluted. Like, let's have pirates kidnap people to take them to our off the books starship. Well, and
I think Matt liked this movie.
Yes, I did.
It's even dumber.
I liked it better in Alien 3.
Oh,
shots fired.
Alien 3 has things I can at least enjoy. This movie has nothing.
No. Well, here's another thing though. In terms of old ships, it's 200 years past 200 years in the future. Who the fuck would still be watching the Home Shopping Network?
Well, they sell guns. Did you notice the video game they're playing that's like sub-Doom on the spaceship?
And they talk about Weyland Yutani being bought out by Walmart.
Yeah.
Is the Dutch East India Company buying anyone out now?
I do like that.
Is Walmart buying anyone now?
Such a 90s version of a distant future.
It is. And again, they have budget for this... KY and for puppets. The rest of it at times does look like the Satellite of Love. I know I keep making Mystery Science Theater jokes,
yeah,
but when they're running down the corridor and the doors are going chink, ka-chink, ka-chink, I'm just like, movie sign! Like, it's really utter, it's hot garbage.
Speaking of hot garbage, No Retreat, No Surrender. That was a great show.
Yeah.
I don't even like to consider this real Ripley. I don't even like considering this Sigourney Weaver's last performance as Ripley. To me, that's Alien 3. This is not the same Ripley.
It's not Ripley.
This is not really Ripley. It doesn't feel like Ripley. Obviously, it's a clone, so...
Well, she seems to have a lot of the memories and some of the mannerisms.
Well, yeah.
But the thing that I hate...
Like the flamethrower.
Sigourney Weaver with a flamethrower, that's a sexy woman for a second, right?
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, the thing that I liked about, let's say, another series, which we'll probably do in this format where we do them in order, are the Terminator movies. Mm-hmm. But Linda Hamilton, in the first one, is scared of the Terminator. In the second one, she has to learn to like the Terminator, but clearly never trusts him.
Yeah.
That's what there needs to be here. In the first three, she's terrified of these monster men, and more she knows what they are, but never trusts them. Now she has to use that trust, and in the end, she's practically first basing it with one.
Yeah.
That is not character development. Ugh. That's weird.
That was super weird.
That was like, oh, and she has a plan. I get it. But this is like some like faux-cest porn stuff.
No, I literally...
you're my baby.
It was her and that like white turd of a creature at the end of the movie, and it was super strange.
The newborn, it reminded me a lot of Pumpkinhead.
It did remind me of Pumpkinhead.
The way the face is structured about its approximate size.
That being said, it looked like shit, but yeah, it did look like Pumpkinhead, yeah.
Now, even that whole thing, this movie was so bad, it like took time to point out the plot holes that were in the other movies that this doesn't even bother to us. For example, we mentioned the newborn creature, which, spoiler alert, that happens at the end. The queen actually gives a live birth to this half-human, half-alien hybrid thing.
Ooh, live birth, baby.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was your ultimate gift, a human reproductive system.
All right, this is Alien Health 101. We're going to watch the Miracle of Life video.
All right, so here's my question that I never even thought about. I never even thought about in the other ones, but here's my question with this one. Okay, if it has a human reproductive system.
Girl.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. How is it getting pregnant? And even before then, who or what was fertilizing the eggs?
Well, Dr. Gediman, I think his name is, was trying to make out with the alien through the glass, so who knows what he was getting up to.
Oh, God, that was so weird. I honestly, I'm glad they didn't pan the camera down below his waist.
So,
oh,
wait.
God.
Brad Dourif is fertilizing alien eggs, personally?
Brad Dourif may
be. Man's
got
to do what a man's got to do.
Oh, yes.
Gross. All of it is gross.
Well, what have these movies become?
Well, I mean, clearly at this point, Brad Dourif is working for the KY factory.
Yeah.
We're in the KY mines. We're hauling a load of it. So I guess honorable mention here to General Perez, Dan Hedaya, who I guess last we saw on Commando, right? He's the heavy in Commando.
Oh, yeah.
He's a scumbag. He always plays a scumbag of various origins, I guess. He looks like a sweaty man. I don't know. He is the general, whatever his rank is. He's a military officer on this, you know, starship floating around Earth where they're trying to resurrect the xenomorphs once again for military purposes. This is the vague,
the vague yet menacing government force.
Yeah, and I don't know why they keep trying this. This is the third movie in a row where they've tried, well, I guess fourth, because it turns out that the company knew about xenomorphs in the first one. So,
oh, wow.
Every single time, again, cribbing from Ridley Scott, and I know you don't like James Cameron as much, but at least a competently well-made movie in the second one,
yeah.
Where, I'm sorry, man, I hate to say this, but Dan Hedaya, you're no Paul Reiser here. You're
yeah,
just
no.
not.
Was the Ellen Ripley clone made from parts of an alien?
It was.
Because she had acidic blood, right?
When she died at the end of Alien 3, I think this is what they're implying. She was pregnant with an alien queen. They cloned her and the alien specifically to get the queen out, and as part of the cloning process, some of the Queen's DNA infected Ripley's DNA and created that sort of a hybrid thing.
Jeez, these movies.
And you know, in case you're curious, it took a few tries. We go through a room out of, I don't know, we threw some examples out there, but like out of Venture Brothers, where there's just a bunch of clones that shouldn't be, including a cliched... I mean, God, it's a melty Ripley.
Ripley left out in the sun too long.
Yeah, with like one boob that has kind of melted down past her hip, and she just goes, kill me. And you're just like, well, well done, movie.
And then she pulls out the old flamethrower.
Shut up and play the hits, right?
Yeah, the thing is, as they point out in the movie, they don't have time to stop and detour.
Oh,
so
yeah.
It would have probably been better if they had to go through the lab to get the elevator. That would have trimmed down a little bit.
I spent about an hour and 39 minutes, whatever this movie's runtime was. I spent roughly an hour and 39 minutes wishing I was watching Aliens.
I was wishing I was watching City of Lost Children again.
Well, yeah.
It looks exactly like this movie, but it's just so much more competently written.
Students out there, teachers don't like grading any more than you like taking, you know, doing homework, but this made homework grading look really good.
Yep.
By the way, for those of you who are curious, he was also Nixon in the movie Dick. He was also in Night at the Roxbury, and for Daniel, probably only other than me, he was in Mulholland Drive.
Who was he in Mulholland Drive?
Vincenzo Castellani.
Oh, yeah! No. This movie's full of like notable character actors.
No, I mean, this movie might be the best cast other than the first one.
Yeah.
I mean, people aren't doing a lot in it, but...
I think Aliens had a better cast.
Aliens has a great cast. I mean, it does. John C. McGinley's in it. He's great. And you can't
Michael
forget
Bean.
Michael Bean will do your movie. You can't forget the great Bill Paxton.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Bill Paxton. I mean, he makes all of these movies. He makes the first Terminator great.
Besides, in terms of the cast of this, besides Winona Ryder, who we mentioned, and Sigourney Weaver, and The General, there's Ron Perlman, and there's Dominique Pignon, and then who else is there?
Oh, well, there's Raymond Cruz, who played Tuco on Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Okay. And
Brad Dourif.
And that's
before Brad Dourif.
He was famous, right?
Yeah.
Leland Orser, who we mentioned, is in Seven. Depends on how much Dan edits out of the beginning of this. But I mean, Leland Orser will play your scumbag. Yep. He's in Seven. He's in. Oh, and by the way, the other thing I don't like about this movie is there's no one to root for. Like, the space truckers at the beginning of Alien are just victims. So you want them all to survive. Like, there's no reason. I mean, you hate the android at the end because he's selling everyone out, but no one's a bad dude.
Right.
You know, the engineers are lazy and they're that kind of shit, but they're not bad guys. Here you have a bunch of people who kidnapped the hypersleep tubes so that they could be infected by aliens. You have alien mad scientists, and then Ripley, who's a clone filled with an alien. The only one you want to survive maybe is Winona Ryder, and then she's the droid at the end who doesn't give a shit.
By the way, side
she,
note
she
with
was, call, she was the most interesting, one of the most interesting characters. Like, they did the whole machine intellect that believes in God about 8 years before Battlestar Galactica.
Oh, that's fair. That's a good point.
No, because Battlestar Galactica is a 70s TV show.
The original Battlestar did not have thinking machines with a religion. That was the new one.
Well.
All right.
But the scene where Winona Ryder plugs her arm in and she's talking through the whole ship, isn't there a scene where she says all aliens go to platform one? And I'm sitting there like, do aliens listen for us to speak English to them?
Well,
or what?
No, that was a just, classic joke em up.
I think
see?
She was just messing with the guy.
Okay.
Well,
I totally got that joke then.
Speaking of which, and we've mentioned this before, Joss Whedon wrote this. And this is the main characters are all space pirates. what the hell happened between this and Firefly? Did he realize just how badly he screwed this up?
I will give him one thing. And again, I don't hate Joss Whedon. It's just that he's a guy who knows his sci-fi. I mean, again, he's not you because you have to have hope. But, you know, he's a nerdy, an optimistic nerdy guy who's like, yeah, I'll write you an Aliens movie. I want to be in the business. And at a certain point, you have to do this. And I bet you he submitted the first draft. And then he's, hey, nerd, get away. Right? Because that's what this screams. Because it's not a terrible idea. Like, it's like, again, it's a soup pot with all the original ideas. A major corporation working with the government is trying to take advantage. Capitalism is bad. Right? Like, that's how all these movies are. And a group of working class schlubs come up. And he's like, what if they were space pirates? You know, like Cyclops' dad in X-Men. You're just like, fine, nerd. Just whatever. And and then Ripley has to come back because she's got to come back. You can't have an alien movie without Ripley. And
except they tried to when 3 was in development. They were going to write Ripley out.
Better movie.
Wait, William Gibson, there's a comic adaptation. I think I referenced this on the
you
Alien
did.
3 that adapts his script, and Ripley's like maybe in 2 scenes.
Wasn't Sigourney Weaver nominated for an Academy Award
for Aliens?
Playing Ripley?
For Aliens.
Okay.
Second one. Again, deservedly so. She's a badass woman in an era where they don't exist. But, I mean, this opened up against, what, L.A. Confidential, and you're just like, oh, you should have drama in a movie. You should have anything in a movie. Like, this is just, like, the dampest of farts.
You know who should have directed this? They wouldn't have hired him because this was right after Island of Dr. Moreau. Richard Stanley.
Oh, gross. Yes, I mean, you're right. It would have been a better movie. We just need someone to deal with the body. I mean, honestly, this is... who did... well, I mean, we said David Cronenberg earlier.
Right.
But I was thinking about we need like a trauma director almost, right?
Lloyd Kaufman from Toxic Avenger.
Well, given we're talking about Dead Alive and Meet the Feebles, and there was that third movie he made, Peter Jackson.
They asked him.
He said no.
Yeah. Well, I mean, if he had done it, what would it have looked like, you think?
Different.
More puppets, less CGI, although I guess that's he's getting away from
he
that.
He probably would have kept some of the steampunk aesthetic that the ship had and that the mad scientists had with their outfits.
I wonder if they didn't ask him about the script and kind of go in his direction, because there are some Peter Jackson-y elements. Much more of a quest in this. It's not as straightforward. You're saving the Earth, right? The first two are literally just survival movies. Even AVP, they're like, we're going to do something. Oh, shit, oh, shit, oh, shit. And it becomes a survival movie again.
I think the because of Jackson's earlier work in splatter gore films, I think a lot of the splatter gore still would have been there because Alien Resurrection had a lot more splattery kind of gory scenes than a lot of the other films.
Yeah, that's what I was kind of getting at, because there's that third New Zealand gore film, the one with the aliens that make people into fast food.
Yeah.
That has a lot of like people's brains hanging out of their heads and just general ick.
Yes.
You know what would have been a weird, interesting way to take this? This is 1997, so tragically he was too big. But you know who does body horror actually kind of okay? Oliver Stone. Do something like The Hand, where it's like really just graphic and crazy. Maybe there are no aliens, just Ripley is going nuts thinking she is an alien and killing people on the ship.
Oh, wow.
So what, the Xenomorphs killed JFK?
Oh, my God. To the left.
Well, Oliver Stone does all that kind of conspiracy theory stuff, so... the military, or at least elements in it, conniving with criminals to engage in some weird black market scheme.
It's an Aaron Sorkin talkie-talk, and they never go to space. It's just board meetings at Leland Nutani trying to figure this shit out. Just walking down the hallway, and a xenomorph's behind them, and they're doing a xenomorph walk and talk.
Did you just call it Leland Nutani?
I did.
I don't think there's any corporations involved in this at all. I think it's purely the military, because they say, like, we're better than a greedy corporation.
They do.
So I guess the pirates are contractors of some kind? Insert Blackwater joke here.
Well, they are literally people kidnapping corpses. Like, their whole thing is, we have this weird scene where it's filmed in the round, where you have the alien eggs about to hatch, and a bunch of faces over test tubes, effectively.
Right, yeah. They're, like, forced over them. Yeah,
yeah, and they're being converted into, well, to breeding grounds. And the only one who survives is Leland Orson, who I mentioned earlier, and he's, what the fuck is in me? It's a weird scene.
And I'll give points for a creative way of killing someone.
hold their head over your chest just when it pops out and it explodes through their head.
Yeah, how many shots did that dude take? Because they shot him like 8 times and then he was still alive. Yeah. And then when the alien came out of him, they shot him like 8 more times.
What, yeah. What the hell was up with that? I mean, when in the past when a chest burster was coming out of somebody, that person was not able to move, like with John Hurt. Suddenly, this guy's invincible?
This dude, like, it's almost as if the alien possessed his body for a second. It was really strange.
Yeah, this one is going to be another how I would have done it for the newsletter, and my idea for it is they tighten it up a little bit, you know, rather than that whole prolonged, I'm going to run at him, get shot 3 times, beat him up, insane, crazy fest. It looks like a shot at a weird angle at about 1.5 speed.
Honestly, the scariest bit in this movie didn't even involve an alien. It was that bit where that guy gets doused in that liquid nitrogen and is trying to pull himself up, but his arm's frozen and like pulls his own arm off.
Oh, yeah. That was something. That was like...
That was actually the coolest kill of the movie.
Yeah.
That was a horror shot right out of Frozen 2. And by the way, I realized I was talking about the wrong movie. I was thinking about the Body Parts movie, Jeff Fahey. If you haven't seen Jeff Fahey in Body Parts, that's pretty great. It has he's in a car accident. He loses his hand, gets a hand transplant. It's effectively the Treehouse of Horror where Homer gets Snake's hair in a hair transplant.
Oh, right, yeah.
And it makes him a serial killer.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what it is. Starring Jeff Fahey. So you're right where you want to be.
So is this before the movie Idle Hand?
Yes.
Idle Hands, yeah.
Body Parts is 1991, and it's something. Anyway, so I've been spending 10 minutes on IMDb trying to figure out what the fuck I was remembering. Alien Resurrection, so how about it?
So where were we before we went off one of our trademark tangents?
We were
Daniel
nowhere.
Was talking about how he liked it because Newt wasn't in it.
Yes.
I had a problem with that.
I figured you would, but yeah, Newt's annoying. But anyway.
There were no animals in this either? No weird cats or dogs floating around?
Yeah, no Jonesy.
No Jonesy, no dog in the third one, no...
No Harry Dean Stanton?
Speaking of weird animals...
Do you need a dog who could smoke? Because we got Harry Dean Stanton. It's literally like he was left out in the rain, a junkyard dog.
Well, I think the biggest crime of Alien Resurrection is, like, I really latched on to Ellen Ripley as a character in the first...
Even three
films. Like, even though three's not necessarily a great film, the reason why I watched it and got through it is because I latched on to Ellen Ripley, but... Sigourney Weaver and what they did to Ripley and the fact that it's not even really Ripley, like, I can't latch on to her character in this movie. It doesn't feel like Ripley to me. I mean, she has Ripley-isms.
What was up with the basketball scene, for example?
The basketball scene?
That was real, by the way.
I know it was real. I don't care that it was
cool,
real, but...
Yeah, that and another sequel that came out around the same time, Escape from L.A.,
ooh.
They always felt like they needed to add in basketball scenes.
Escape from
Catwoman.
L.A.
Catwoman.
It was terrible.
Well, it might make sense as a character thing for Ripley that if she, you know, she's very tall, so if she has a sport hobby she plays, it could be basketball.
Don't give me characterization horse shit. She hasn't played basketball in 3 movies.
They were doing it to show how the alien DNA in her has somehow enhanced some of her abilities. That was the point of the scene. And
so someone saw Space Jam, and they're like, what would aliens in basketball do? Hey!
Well, they
basketball do. Hey!
Well, they have that Gatorade commercial. It's a Velociraptors playing basketball. Let's make one of the Xenomorph playing basketball.
Oh, Christ.
The whole room in the ship devoted to basketball. Interesting.
Yeah. Just so Ron Perlman can sexually harass Ripley.
Oh, that God. Man has a face like Stonehenge. I love it. Every time I see him.
That's why Mom says about him is he's not good looking, but he has a good voice. So they hire him for roles where he does voiceover or is wearing masks.
There's a reason why he plays like the Beast in the Beauty and the Beast TV show or like Hellboy. You
that's
know?
Kind of what we're getting at.
Yeah. He was the best Clayface.
He was. Yeah. I was going to say, I was talking to Adam before this. This movie is cast like a Tim Burton movie. Everyone has a distinct angles and curves and crevices in their face. And I mean, this will come out before we did this. And if not, Sudsy will make me sound smarter, but we're doing Pee-wee's Playhouse, and Pee-wee Big Adventure, excuse me, is a Tim Burton movie, and it's the same way. Everyone has a distinct jawline, strong cheekbones, weird crevices, except for Pee-wee, and that's what makes him look like the way he does, which is, you know, kind of a boyish Pinocchio innocent type, right? Even Dottie, the love interest, has these crazy 1980s bangs, has a round face, has kind of a weird curvy body on a small child frame. Like, she has a distinct look down to, like, down to Marge, right? And that's what this looks like. Like, Leland Orser, man, you see him and you cross the street. Brad Dourif, you're like, oh, he's going to want to fuck one of them aliens. And he does.
Oh, yeah.
Well, oh, she's beautiful. And you're just like,
beautiful, he's beautiful licking the butterfly.
He's licking the glass up to the alien.
Now, yeah. Speaking of Tim Burton, the whole reason some of these people were is because Ron Perlman was in City of Lost Children, and so was Dominique Pignon, the guy in the wheelchair. Speaking of which, what was up with the way they introduced him when they're going through that metal detector, and he's like, you want to check the chair? And I'm just thinking, well, yeah, I'm sure they kind of do.
We lived through 9/11, man. You check the chair, and you make that old lady walk, and then you kick her and laugh at her. That's the American way.
I think we should mention the scene where they pick which alien needs to sacrifice themselves so that they can burn themselves through the floor.
God,
that was a weird scene. It was like aliens screaming at each other for about a minute and a half.
It sure was.
And it was really odd, and it was quick edits, and it was just made me feel very uncomfortable.
On an individual level, are that smart?
No.
I don't know. Because it looks like one of them was like trying to sacrifice himself, like they were going to, you know, so they could burn themselves through the floor, but... Are they that smart?
Because the queens are probably pretty smart, but those aren't queens.
Were they arguing? Did one of them cheat on the other one? I don't know.
Well, and it's funny because, A, we know they're not that smart. They're supposed to be rats or... No, it's specifically supposed to be like bees or ants, right? Because you have a queen and then everything else is drones, right? They say that time and time again. It's stupid. It's awful, but that's what it is. And here they're bickering like dogs, which is stupid. But then it made me realize this came out the same year as Lost World. And this has a lot of the problems that Lost World does. And to this movie's credit over Lost World is getting dinosaurs to the mainland. And it takes 2 hours and 20 minutes to get there. This movie is 93 minutes, and God bless it. That's the only thing that makes this movie possibly watchable. Because if it was 2.5 hours like Prometheus... No one would have gotten through this. You guys would be lying about the third act because I know none of you would have watched it.
Yeah. This was a hard movie to get through, guys. This was so difficult.
Speaking of them bickering like dogs, is there one scene where the alien spits acid?
Yeah, because it burns part of that guy's face.
Okay, so then why did they kill that one if they could spit acid?
Yeah, Matt. No, I'm kidding. I don't know. I also don't think it spits acid. I think it's cut and then it like does the blood spit thing.
Okay. That makes sense because Johnner, I think it was, Ron Perlman was shooting down the ladder at him it.
Yeah, and I think that's what it was.
Because if it was spitting like a big blob of acid, it would have eaten half his face off, but a little bit just burned him around the eye a bit.
Which is... gross. I don't know what this is called. I think it sounds like a subreddit. It's like tryptophania, where you have where you feel uncomfortable around weird patterns, like weird textures. Oh. His face dissolving, and I'm just like,
it doesn't even look like it's dissolved. It looks like he's getting a bunch, like maybe it's like you see veins, so it's some kind of burn.
Oh God.
Or maybe some of the, maybe thing. Some of the skin's melted off.
They do that thing with the paraplegic too, where like they throw a knife at his leg and it lands in his leg at the beginning, but he doesn't feel it because he's a paraplegic. And then later the acid lands on his leg and burns straight through his leg and he notices his flesh burning. He's like, oh, and then he pats on it and his hand starts burning and he goes, owie, 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 owie. It is shockingly stupid.
Also, that's a character moment. Johnner is an asshole. I'm going to drop a knife on a dude for kicks.
I also realized why I forgot why I mentioned Lost World. I was thinking it came out after Jurassic Park 3, but this movie gave Jurassic Park 3 something, because in Jurassic Park 3, the raptors are talking to each other like dipshits. And Alan Grant even makes that harmonica thing that he blows into to talk to the raptors, remember?
Oh yeah.
And you're just like, oh my god, the xenomorphs are talking.
You're reminding me of Jurassic Park 3. Why?
Because remember when he has that dream and the raptor goes, Alan. You want to talk about someone who did something just for a paycheck? My God, Sam Neill. Oh, God bless
him. He's
coming
back for the next Jurassic World movie.
It could be worse.
He needs a new garage, man.
Oh, it could be worse. There's that one where he was Thomas Jefferson and he's wearing a red wig and it's so hideous looking.
Oh, but you know what? That was for John Adams, right?
No, it was for this one movie. It's about Sally Hemings. So you've got Sam Neill in a bright red wig, and he just looks so bizarre.
Wasn't it like a Jefferson in Paris or
something? No, that was a serious movie. This looks like some weird this is some direct-to-video thing.
Oh, Lord.
The king of direct-to-video, Matt. Well done. Thank you.
I saw it at the store. I didn't watch it.
A friend watched it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you took all the steam out of me talking. Whatever. I mean, we're pretty much to the
end of this
movie.
I've seen enough crappy direct-to-video movies, believe me. Believe me, they're tremendous.
No, they're not. You showed us The Giver. I believe you.
Yeah, previous episode, The Giver. Oh, don't worry. For those of you who are Patreon subscribers, which I guess if you're listening to this, you are a Patreon subscriber. Matt's How I Would Have Fixed The Giver is coming.
It was the first one.
Oh, was that the first one? Okay, because you've sent me six already, so I guess we're done through September.
We've hit on some of the scenes. We've hit on the scene with the cloned Ripley's, the basketball scene.
What about the white shit at the end with,
that's what I wanted to talk about, that whole newborn scene
getting all his organs sucked out through his butthole.
Okay, God,
what a great.
So the newborn is born, it kills the queen, and then it bonds with Ripley, and doesn't it kill Brad Dourif?
It
rips the top of his head off.
And then it kills DiStefano, the jackass pirate guy.
And then
and it's creeping on call when Ripley shows up.
So let's do this scene. Ripley at one point is pulled through the floor and ends up on what looks like the snake pit from Indiana Jones 3. As she comes to, regains consciousness from her fall, Brad Dourif is there narrating. Just drop an exposition. He goes, what the alien needed from you was a human reproductive system so that she could give live births. Because eggs, I guess, for millennia had been too efficient or whatever the horse shit he's talking about. Because the eggs need a host. They hatch, they whatever.
Mad scientist, horseshit.
Cocooned and probably infested.
Mad scientist in a cocoon jerks off to xenomorphs.
That's
yes.
right. Yeah. I'm going to found a website called 4chan. At that point, Dr. DeviantArt.
that's a good one.
That's a good name for him.
She's beautiful. She's. He's breaking out of his cocoon from his erection. That was the sound I was doing.
That's his eternal damnation, is he can't touch himself because he's cocooned.
Yeah, my Foley work is just boner, boner, boner. And so he's essentially describing to the wounded woman on the floor what the giant queen is doing and why, for some reason, the xenomorphs aren't attacking her. She thinks it's because she's part xenomorph, and he goes, no, it's because you're their mother. And this is a real kick in the crotch to Ripley, who in the second movie discovers, and remember, the second and third movie are supposed to happen essentially simultaneously, right? Because the third movie happens immediately after the second movie, that her daughter has just died. So she had a daughter on Earth after the second movie, you know, and so now she's a mother to everyone. And that's all the director heard, because the whole rest, she's a really creepy mother to these things the whole time.
Yeah.
It's very uncomfortable.
It's like an Oedipus thing going on.
It sure is. And there's no father. It's the virgin birth. This makes it the alien messiah.
When Sigourney Weaver started fondling that white that white turd creature at the end, I literally sat there and I'm like, what are these movies becoming? These movies used to be something else.
If it was filmed in Italian and there was just a subtitle, yay, I am complete, lo, I am ruptured. It is just slow. But this movie just thinks it's so fucking saying something.
Well, I have no idea who came up with the newborn and why it looks like that. I think that's what they were building the movie around. It's like, combine an alien and a human, see what we get. But it doesn't actually do anything.
It's menacing for all of 10 minutes. And it's also worth noting at this point, all the space marines have fled the ship, leaving everyone to die. And a xenomorph gets in. They blow up one of the ships. Like, there are very few survivors. And frankly, all the action happens in 10 minutes, about 20 minutes into the movie.
A bunch of the soldiers evacuated the ship and survived. There's only that one shuttle that had the xenomorph on it. So you'd think whatever's in the solar system is going to be coming for the Auriga.
There's nothing. That they have intentionally built this as a lab.
But it's heading towards Earth, and they reference some sort of station there.
Right, and that's why it has to blow up at the end. But the ticking clock, I don't know, like what we need to do is, well, like the first movie, where there's a ticking clock, where it says, you know, 20 minutes to, the only time we get we're about to re-enter the atmosphere is at the end when they're already escaping.
Right.
Or if we don't get off in 30 seconds,
And by that time, you're like, oh yeah, they're going to Earth.
By that time, you're checking your fucking watch.
By that time, we'd already seen the newborn's guts get sucked out through
its butthole.
How did that window get broken anyway?
Ripley used her own blood.
That's right. Okay. Oh, yeah. Also, this was something I never knew before. I only knew it now because I have the subtitles on, and this is the stupidest element of this movie.
Oh, God. Help
this
us.
This is the stupidest element?
Yes. Mm. That newborn, as it's being sucked through that window, starts screaming, oh, no!
Oh, my God. Are you
kidding?
Like
Mr. Bill?
Yes.
Oh, no!
Basically,
no,
yes.
No.
I think the idea they're going for is the newborn is human enough for people to empathize with.
It's so goddamn stupid and pointless.
But I don't remember it talking at all.
It does.
I just remember it screeching a
lot. It does vocalize.
All I know is that the closed captions had it saying, oh no, no, no.
I do remember something else was when it gets trapped behind a door. In fact, I think its head gets stuck in a door.
Yeah.
And it gives Winona Ryder sad eyes like it's a puppy. And Winona Ryder for half a second goes, oh, and you're just like, no.
No.
Let it fucking die. Like
that thing, I don't know why people, that was a thing. Like, to me, the whole time, it just looked terrible.
Have you ever heard the phrase abomination of nature, Cal?
Every time I get naked.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
No, by Cal's own standards, she's an abomination of nature.
Why do you think I don't own mirrors?
Which she takes out.
Yeah, right.
Hey.
Oh, no respect, no respect
yeah,
at all.
Yeah, there we go. And then at this point, guess what? The day is saved. Ron Perlman and the paraplegic guy whose name I couldn't even be bothered.
Vreese. I just kept referring to him as, oh, delicatessen guy.
Yeah.
I think the dude's name is Vreese, and he has this really strange accent. I'm not sure what he's supposed to be.
He's French! Why do you think he has this outrageous accent?
Yeah. I thought he might have been Dutch or something.
No, he's French.
He is. He's one of the director's stable of actors.
He was the lead in Delicatessen. He was the, like, cloned children thing in City of Lost Children.
Yeah.
I need to see that.
It's a great movie.
The problem is 90% of the cast is killed in that 10-minute montage. And then all the threat disappears, which bothers me. There's supposed to be 12 xenomorphs running around.
Yeah.
After the one is killed by Ripley, who literally shoots through it, which is a great scene, nothing else. We don't see any of the other dozen who are wandering the ship. It doesn't seem like even as big as the ship as the Nostromo.
Yeah. And no, it's not.
At least one is still alive because you see it hissing when the Auriga blows up.
Well, right. But there's supposed to be 11 other ones running around.
Okay. Two of them were killed in the swimming scene or immediately afterward. One was melting through the floor.
And then there's nine others.
Then that's Ripley. I think we had four, so there should be eight.
But again, they should be a constant threat. That's something that the second one did well, where there's constantly, like, even if you can't afford to show them, beeps on a radar screen are fucking creepy.
Like that scene when one of them in Aliens looks through the ceiling and there's a whole army of them just crawling. That's some scary shit. In this movie, they're standing in the hallway yelling at top of their lungs, arguing for 10 minutes, and not a single xenomorph pops in to say hi.
And that one where the xenomorph gets in that they blow up, what should have happened is they get to the top and the xenomorph is in it, so they launch it empty. So there's another 20 dead meats aboard because I want to see murders on a fucking horror movie, man.
When the guy was like, there's 12 more xenomorphs, I'm like, oh, there's going to be some carnage. I was so wrong.
Yeah. They forget about that other 12 more.
And they abandoned ship. Those soldiers probably could have killed all the xenomorphs.
Probably.
There could have been anything. Or you don't establish that there's a dozen of them and make it like the first and the third one where there's one because they're a threat. This movie loses track of what the point is, and that's the problem. Like, we might as well do final judgments here, but you have to pick if you're a horror movie or an action movie. This movie can't decide, and what you end up with is a weird kind of body sci-fi.
That tries to make jokes, but all the jokes come out wrong because nobody knows how jokes work.
If you want to make it a weird feminist, like, body horror thing about the horrors of childbirth, you can do that. But Videodrome does it. Like, that's what Cronenberg's doing.
Oh, hell yeah.
We're obsessed with our culture, and therefore sex is replaced with media, and there's literally a vagina in a chest being eaten with a videotape. Fine. This doesn't say anything about motherhood.
Later,
and goddamn poor Ripley is trying to cradle the head of a monster where she's literally dripping in KY gel.
The vibe I was getting with her and Call was that she was using Call as Newt 2.0, essentially. You know,
I didn't get that at all.
But she's saying, hey, go to your death. You don't matter. You're an android. Well, now I love you.
She's a clone. How does she have the original Ripley's memories? That's not how cloning works. Well,
that's not supposed to happen. Thanks, script.
They mentioned the movie talking about genetic memory, which if I were doing this, which you'll reel to read about, that I'd have the memories coming back throughout the movie as sort of her original, that she starts coming back.
Actually, you know what, Matt? I would take that idea over this, where there's like brief glimpses and flashes, but the way it's done here in the finished product, no.
Yeah,
that
brief flashes
work.
Would be fine. There's no indication of what she can remember, what she can't remember, why she has the memories.
She does remember.
Shut up. Good idea. It ends like Total Recall, though, and you're not sure if she's real or if it's been a dream the whole time.
Oh, man.
And then it ends like Brazil, where it's just scenes from the other movies as she's desperately trying to kill the aliens, right? And at the end, it turns out that she's dead on the operating table. The experiment didn't work. fucking Jacob's Ladder ending. That's how you make this a fucking movie.
And she does remember the queen, the whole, she'll breed, you'll die.
When they showed the queen and she had the flamethrower, I was like, when can I watch Aliens again?
Yeah, let's just rewatch the second one, baby. The second one's a movie. The
second one's amazing.
You know how you were trying to make a movie? That one is a movie. Like
Jimmy Cameron made a movie.
That Jim Cameron's going places. Anyway, Adam, give us your final thoughts.
The first Alien, I think we can all agree, is a horror science fiction masterpiece. The second one is one of the greatest sequels of all time. And the third one, whether you like it or not, has some really intriguing and engaging elements to it. This fourth one is just a hot piece of shit. The thing that pisses me off the most about this movie is they even put her in the credits as Ripley, and they call her Ripley throughout the movie. Sigourney Weaver's not playing Ripley. She's playing some shell of what Ripley was in those first three movies, and a lot of that's due to bad writing, but a lot of it's also due to the fact that they gave her a truckload of money to come back for this movie, and she didn't really want to do it in the first place. This movie's hot garbage, it's terrible, and the effects did not age well, and they should have ended it on Alien 3. This movie, single-handedly, like Batman and Robin did to Batman, Alien Resurrection killed the franchise until AVP in 2004.
Yeah.
Now I'm just thinking about what would happen if a Xenomorph pulled out a Xenomorph credit card, and I'm stuck with that image now.
If you're going to be like, bad, at least be good.
Something like... That's probably what it would do.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. I give this 1 out of 4. I could barely sit through it.
Yeah.
You should get whatever that was checked out there, Matt.
yeah, I'm a little worried over there.
Yeah. I don't know why this was made. I don't know who this was for, because especially after Alien 3, for the most part, it was treated with a shrug. I mean, I defended that movie, or at least tried to. I was definitely in the minority on that one, but I can understand why after that, if everyone just put the kibosh on future aliens. But then they make this, and it's completely pointless. The characters are all terrible. The pacing is all wrong. The dialogue is trying to be funny, but it's just so inappropriate. It looks good. Like, it's actually good to look at, because this director's got a very good visual eye. But if you want that, just go watch... Like I've said, go watch City of Lost Children, because it's the exact same aesthetic, except that is a much better movie that actually has a point. There is no point to this whatsoever. None.
Matt?
I enjoyed watching it. I found it entertaining, although you guys have pointed out there are some plot holes, and I noticed some areas of wasted potential that could be improved. So, I mean, maybe see it once, because it's an hour and a half and it's quick moving. But, yeah, there is some, again, read my version of how I would have done it, because mine would probably make more sense.
This is the fourth one in 18 years. And it's funny, like, we're in an era where Marvel put out 29 movies in 20 years or 10 years or whatever was.
Wow, yeah.
22,
yeah.
And what did they do? They switched the genres up. Like, Ant-Man is a heist movie. And, you know, like, they didn't bother. I it feels like they kept trying to pull away, but then they got sucked back to the thing, right? I don't like AVP. The reason why AVP is better than this is it feels like a heist movie at times. It feels like it's a different genre, and then xenomorphs show up. This is just hot garbage, man. Skip it, because the best notes of it come from other movies. Other than that weird scene with all the clone shit in tubes, which is out of nowhere, that's the only truly different scene. Otherwise, that's why I think Prometheus and Covenant, which I guess started in 2012, went back to form and made it slow, plotting, dramatic, sci-fi alien movie, because at least that was, if you're going to go back to form, go back to that. Because Jim Cameron figured out space horror in an action way. If we want to go straight back to drama, go back to drama. This in-between shit just never worked. But I guess at the end of the quadrilogy, we have ended the Ripley saga, and what we agreed on is the only thing worth mentioning about it is Sigourney Weaver.
Do yourself a favor, watch Alien, Aliens, or the underrated director's cut of Alien 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Watch Ghostbusters and Ghostbusters 2. Get as much Sigourney as you can in your life, because...
The gatekeeper.
She is phenomenal. And I guess since we've now done Honey, I Shrunk the Kids, welcome back to acting Rick Moranis, sex pot.
Wait. Keymaster... Gatekeep. Oh my God, I just got that.
Hey, yeah.
I'm putting things together.
You learned something today.
Oh, and I was
it was at that moment.
that Daniel became a man.
No, we need the Daniel Stern, like, Wonder Years voiceover.
Yes.
Daniel figured it out today. And I guess, because I guess we're here talking about her, play the Ghostbusters video game, which has been remastered on all the systems. Came out in 2009. It's now back in HD. It has all the original voice actors in it.
Sigourney Weaver wasn't in that.
But Ramis, it's the last thing Ramis did before he died.
Oh, it's the last time you hear Ramis as Egon.
Yeah.
And Bill Murray was actually, you know, wanting to do it. So
yeah, he actually showed up as opposed to whatever's coming out with Ivan Reitman's son, that sexist fuck. He's the one who coined the term Mary Sue and was ruining all the Star Wars movies. Jason Reitman?
Oh, yeah.
That guy's a prick.
It's ironic because the last...
He didn't coin the term Mary Sue. That's been around for decades.
Okay, fine. Fuck him. I still don't like him. You're allowed to like Rey. People, you're allowed to like Rey in the new Star Wars movie. Nothing wrong with Rey. And with Darby saying there's nothing wrong with Rey. Get your plugs in. Adam, plug what you want to do right now. Tell us where you're going to be.
First off, obviously, if you're here, you like podcasts and you like movies and most likely horror movies. I am currently the host and lead actor on a horror podcast called Kept From Sleep.
Yep.
Me and my friend, we collaborated together and we put together sort of an old school anthology style horror podcast, kind of in the style of like a Twilight Zone. It kind of reads like an old intense horror radio show. Each episode's about sort of a different thing, but they all, as you kind of listen, link together into sort of a shared universe. So check it out, Kept From Sleep Horror Podcast.
Yep.
And then me and my lovely girlfriend are going to be in a show called Life with Father, playing at the Roswell United Methodist Church in Roswell, Georgia. And that'll be a one-weekend-only show for 3 days during the last weekend of March, from March 27th to 29th.
If you like us and remember season 3 and so, Jade has a podcast now called Hindsight is Horrible, and you're on it a lot. Yes. Or Horrifying, excuse me. Hindsight is Horrifying.
Hindsight is Horrifying. Yep, I've been on 5 episodes.
And I think this is your fourth for us?
Fourth for you guys, yeah.
So you're a regular. And... you know, they also have a YouTube channel. We don't dabble much in YouTube, but if you want to see his beautiful face, you can see it live. And if you're one of the, I don't know, 20,000 people outside of Georgia who downloaded us last month, you can see him on YouTube on Hindsight is Horrifying. So thank you guys. Thanks you for being a Patreon subscriber. Next time you hear us, we'll be doing Prometheus, right? That's the next one.
AVP2, I think, is the next one.
AVP2 is going to be on the main feed, though.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, yes, you will hear that first, but Patreon only will be doing Prometheus and then Covenant, and then we'll start taking, when we do Prometheus, suggestions for the next series we're going to do. We've thrown out Back to the Future. We've thrown out the original series of Star Wars. We've thrown out The Terminator. So whatever you guys want, start pinging us on Twitter because... again, we're doing it for you guys. You're paying us. So whatever you want to hear, I think all of those series would be great. Or if you have something I haven't even thought of yet, we want to do a pure series. One we haven't done any episodes on the main feed yet. Stay tuned next week, next month, next decade, as we put another piece of your past on trial. Thanks, guys.
Right Between Your Childhood is a product of Blue Letter Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, produced by Nick Hoffman, Daniel Suttis, and Matthew Quinn, and edited by Daniel Suttis. Our theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin McLeod from incomptech.com, licensed under Creative Commons license by Attribution 3.0.